Hello, I'm Richard Aidy. This is The Money. Today, a slightly different show. You'll meet two economists who believe that nearly all of us are being ripped off. Not just in one area either, in several sectors that are integral to modern life. And it's happening again and again and again. Cameron Murray, who's at the University of Queensland, and Paul Freitas, now at the London School of Economics, have co-authored Game of Mates, How Favours Bleed the Nation. Their thesis is that ordinary Australians are losing out to a well-connected few, as Cameron Murray explains.
These days, if you work for a living, you're really on the receiving end of bad policies up and down at all levels of government in Australia. And if you don't, if you've inherited wealth or you run a large company, you're on the benefiting side of numerous policies at all levels of government.
And how much is this costing?
Our estimate in the book is probably hundreds of billions of dollars a year. So you're looking at something like, in terms of GDP, more than 10% of GDP. And for those who are really missing out on everything, it's up to half of the wealth they could have had under a different set of policies and systems.
Half of the wealth? How did you work that out, Paul?
What we did is we looked at the money coming into individuals and the money going out of individuals. So how much less is going in because they have to pay more taxes, because others manage to dodge their taxes, or how much less is coming in because there's a siphoning off in terms of superannuation, in terms of other financial factors in between what is it where their market value would be and what they actually get in their pockets. And then there is the expenditure side. And the expenditure side, we just looked at the major big ticket items. So what do people spend a lot of money on? They spend a lot of money on the mortgage. They spend a lot of money on education, on health. And in each of those sectors, we sort of try to get a ballpark figure for how much was being siphoned off. And as a rule of thumb, on the expenditure side, maybe 30% was siphoned off. And on the incoming side, maybe 20%. So together, we sort of, a half sounds about right.
Well, how's this happening? How are they doing it?
Well, I think the first thing to realise is that the social organisation that goes on behind politics is the natural way humans organise themselves. And what we end up with is some superficial discussion about policies, but really, in reality, what's going on behind is this social structure of vested interests pushing their particular agendas, nurturing their agendas, and describing them in terms of ideology or in terms of, you know, the public good. And everybody else is missing out, and they're in many ways blocked from the genuine real conversations that are going on behind closed doors. So it happens in back rooms and in boring meetings amongst politicians, big business, on a repeated basis. It's not that exciting, and it's totally natural and normal.
But Cameron, this isn't a banana republic. We're like the 12th biggest economy in the world. We've got a robust parliamentary democracy. We've got strong institutions. We've got a regulatory system of the financial sector that's been held up as one of the most effective in the world. How do these two pictures overlap?
So that's sort of the good part of it. Australia is a wealthy country. Many things run quite well. What we do in the book, we try and paint a picture of the best we could be. So what we do is compare Australia with other countries in particular sectors of the economy, but no country has everything perfect. Every country's got their own groups of interests and manipulation of their political system. So in terms of a global system, yeah, we're not doing too bad. I think the problem is really that we're probably going backwards over time. And that's the problem. What we want to do is really push forward with new reforms to stop these favours being given out. And in the long run, if you take a centuries-long view, most societies are winning this game against vested interests and sharing society's wealth quite widely. The problem is there are waves and short periods in between where those with their vested interests really begin to take control. And we think we're in one of those waves at the moment.
There are lots of names for this, cronyism for one. But it's worth underlining that most of what concerns Cameron and Paul isn't illegal. This isn't about breaking the law. It's about grey areas, like grey gifts.
So a grey gift is in essence a decision by a bureaucrat or a government that doesn't directly cost the government or the bureaucrat any money from their budget, but is worth something to particular individuals outside of the government bureaucracy circle. So it is something that has a market value, but that is unpriced. So in that sense, it's a broad term. It's basically any decision that makes some individuals into millionaires and others not, but for which the person who becomes a millionaire as a result of it doesn't have to pay.
Cameron Murray says, in a way, you can think of a level of government as being a bit like a branch of McDonald's.
At some point, somebody has to make a discretionary decision over things. So the manager of a store will make sure people aren't giving out things for free, but they are still left with power to decide who gets the best shift, who gets the weekend shift, etc. So it sort of takes it up a layer. But the protection McDonald's has is if all their store managers essentially are in the business of giving out shifts to mates or whatever, then the whole business is threatened by the competition from everybody else.
And often the regulation works for the company rather than the customer.
What we typically find is that regulations are enacted in order to benefit the private interest. So there's this idea that, oh, if not for meddling bureaucrats, we wouldn't have all this regulation. They're the problem. No, the private interests that benefit from the regulation like having more regulation. It stops the competition.
But Cameron says this only happens because we let it.
We get to decide what is corrupt and what is not by the laws that we enact. We can look at, for example, New South Wales, where political donations by property developers are banned. So for a property developer to try and influence politics through giving gifts, they need to be corrupt. Whereas in Queensland, they don't. They can be perfectly legally giving tens of thousands of dollars, paying, I think, recently we saw that the Queensland Labor government was charging $5,500 for a meeting with a minister. Totally legal, but illegal in New South Wales, where they've implemented laws to make it so.
On The Money Today, we're hearing from the authors of Game of Mates, which spells out how ordinary Australians are being ripped off by people with better connections. Co-author Paul Freitas says not all industries offer the same opportunities.
The industries most prone to it are where, in effective, secret, hard-to-understand environments, bureaucrats and politicians give out gifts that are worth billions. And so the most secret places would probably be military procurement, that sort of thing, because it's by design secretive. It has billions of it. It's a very murky world of suppliers, buyers, and all kinds of special deals can be done. So it's very hard to research for other people because very quickly you're up against secrecy acts. And there have been books, exposés about the international arms trade. And of course, there's this huge raucous about these tremendously expensive submarines that Australia supposedly at one time is going to get. So that's a prime place.
But it's not the only one.
And other places are obviously property, because in property, giving some people the right to refurbish a large apartment block or to put up dense housing where previously there was not dense housing, those are gifts worth a tremendous amount. The way in which those decisions are made are very murky for most individuals. And so it's also a prime place where hidden deals over time can be done. But there are now many areas in the economy where you'll get similar stuff. So pharmaceuticals is a prime place which has been well researched. The superannuation industry, these complex financial instruments are also very murky, very difficult for people to see the deals and the grey gifts that are there, but they are actually enormous in banking. Health in general is an area where you'll get a lot of this.
There's also the mining industry, which Cameron Murray says expects to get sweet deals from government and benefits from them enormously.
So imagine that you own an investment property and you rent it out to your tenants for $300 a week. This is essentially the situation with mining. As a community, we own those minerals and we allow the miner to extract it and make a small profit for doing that service. Now, if the market goes up to, say, $1,000 a week to rent it, what we're doing is essentially letting our tenants sublet and take that $700 profit for themselves that they weren't entitled to. That's what we're doing as a community, letting the miners take that additional profit for themselves that they weren't entitled to because we own the resources and they're still paying us a price that was set many decades ago when they started. So that's the logic of this sort of minerals super profits tax, that we're giving away the wealth that we own jointly to these particular miners who haven't paid for it.
Ah, yes, the mining super profits tax. Remember that?
This is just a standard tax that exists in many countries, including Norway, for over 50 years. And we have basically the same tax on offshore petroleum. So it's a good thing. If we wanted to be the world's best at regulating a mining industry, that's what we'd do. And you saw as soon as there was a political opportunity to propose it, the vested interests just really started coordinating and organising the downfall of that to keep those billions in their hands and not in everybody else's.
This morning, Prime Minister Julia Gillard announced that a deal had been negotiated with the mining industry over the controversial super profits tax. It's had a name change and will be slashed to 30%.
From an outside perspective, just observing it at the time, the Labor government seemed to cave pretty quickly.
Just be aware that, you know, once the mining industry is beaten, there's a whole network of supporters of the Labor Party in different industries that may feel threatened that their cozy relationship and their abnormally high profits are the next to go. So I think they would have been really happy to support the miners to push back against those types of reforms because of the fear that they might be next on the chopping block. So I'm not sure if Labor really could have. And I probably think there are many in the Labor Party who didn't want it to go through because they had supporters from the mining industry, supporting their campaigns and their local communities. So, it takes a huge political will, typically a crisis of some sort, to get these sorts of changes.
This is The Money on RN, the ABC Listen app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Ady. Today we're hearing from economists Cameron Murray and Paul Freitas, the co-authors of Game of Mates, How Favours Bleed the Nation. And Paul, I have to ask you about the banks.
If you look at where the profits are made, there's sort of two main areas. One is in mortgage interest rates, which are far above the rate of interest that are on as it were, borrowing money from the central bank via the money creation mechanism. So this is the wedge between the interest rates that the Australian central bank puts out and sort of, revises every 3 months. Between that and what the average mortgage payer is paying, that wedge has been close to something like 1.5%, 2% for a long time. Now, it is true that there is now a bit more competition for new mortgages and that switching is slightly easier, but the devil is in the detail with a lot of those contracts. So it's often that the mortgage rate is then low for a year, but then it goes up again. All that what happens is that unless you quickly transform it into something after a year or 2 years, it goes up automatically. So unless you pay a lot of attention, you actually get back to this very high level of mortgage rate wedge. And so de facto, mortgage interest rates are still way too high in Australia. And the ability to switch in terms of long-term contracts, in terms of being assured that there are no catches, is not there at all. What has more happened is the product of mortgages simply become more complex, so that it's harder to see for people when and where they're being screwed over. But don't worry, they are.
But Paul Freitas says we could do something about mortgages.
The mortgage stuff could be done better if you get a lot more competition, and that could, for instance, be done by not having 4 system banks, but just have 20 of them, right? That would be one way to go. But I also think that we should look a bit more at the longer term and think of some of the core aspects of banking, which in fact are like public goods and which have to do with government monopolies. And one of the key ones is that government can step in any market and become a provider of things which are very standardized, because that's what governments do well. Governments provide us with standardized education, standardized transport, passports, standardized healthcare. Governments are actually, and bureaucracies are actually very good at providing that relatively cheaper than private markets can provide them, which is why most of those things are state-run pretty much everywhere in the Western world. And I think that there are some banking aspects which can also just be run by governments. And one of the things that can be run by governments is minimal mortgages, so up to 65% of the value of a house could be run by governments, and that can be done in various ways. But you can simply have a state bank which has a state-run interest rate level for that first 65%, and that would even make the state quite a bit of money. But it's fairly risk-free, and it takes away a lot of this profits and brings it back into public hands, where it should be, because money is, of course, a public good.
Not only that, Paul says we should be much better served by the superannuation industry.
The world best is actually, again, state-run pension systems like the Danish have and the Dutch also, which have overheads of something like 0.1% a year in terms of the money you go in, how much every year is taken out. Now, 0.1%, so 0.1% a year, is taken out every year. So that means after 2 years, 0.2% is taken out, after 20 years, 2% is taken out, and after 50 years, maybe 5% is lost on all this overhead. Well, that's not so much, is it? Now, in Australia, that number, and there have been well-researched reports into this, is probably more like 1.2% overhead per year or higher. Particularly the commercial products from banks can be up to 2% overhead per year. Now, 2% overhead per year doesn't sound like much, but it's every year. So on a working life of 40 years, that means the dollars you put in first, well, there's 2% the first year, then another 2% the second year, another 2% the third year, and it's sort of a complicated formula as how much you then get out. But of that initial dollar, over 40 years, and if you're paying 2%, not much more than, well, 80 cents survives after the 40 years, all the rest has gone into overhead. So with super, you should look at the skyline of your major cities, see the superannuation firms that dominate it, and say to yourself, I'm paying for that. And I'm paying for that via overhead.
Australian super, he says, is not only unnecessarily complicated, it's characterised by cosy relationships.
It's an agreement between employers and employees as to the menu that is available to the employees. So it's unions and employers who sort of decide this, and the employees sort of have a take it or leave it option for it. And this is, again, they're made a very complex financial product with hundreds of pages of extra explanation, which almost nobody reads or could understand. And lots of the fees are hidden in it. Switching is very, very difficult. But the core bit is that because unions and employers set this, they have every incentive to do a deal with each other, and they do. And then often they get parliaments to sort of sanctify their deal and say, okay, this super fund is now the only super fund in this industry. Well, that, of course, gives someone a monopoly and makes it matters worse.
Earlier, you heard Paul talking about property and the huge benefits to the landowner when it's rezoned. Actually, one Australian jurisdiction does something to change this.
The shining example is actually within Australia how the ACT runs its rezoning system. And so what the ACT, the core of the ACT system, is that if you try and take advantage of rezoning as a property developer or a property owner and say, okay, I want to put up a high-rise block here where previously there was just a single house or there was a farm, then you're taxed 75% of the expected increase in the land value because of that action. And you're taxed it irrespective of whether you then actually go through with building this extra apartment, and you lose the right to do it after 2 years. And so this has two advantages. One is most of the grey gift is actually taken back into the hands of the public, and you actually speed up the process of development. So you don't get this land banking where people are on rezoned land but are deliberately not developing it in order to wait for a better time later on, which in fact causes a lot of, as it were, congestion in housing building and slows down the rate of urban expansion.
I've done the calculation. If the rest of the country adopted the ACT system, there'd be $11 billion a year in additional revenue for the states. And that's what they're giving away for free right now to property developers. So we should focus on that, not getting the property developer to disclose they donated $10,000 to a political party. If we clamp down on the political system's ability to give out the favour, they might not bother donating at all.
This is The Money. I'm Richard Ady. Today, you may be having confirmed what you always suspected, that it's not what you know, it's who you know. And those who know the right people are getting deals that are good for them, not so good for you. They sound like bad people, these dealmakers, don't they? But Cameron Murray says they're quite a lot like you and me, and he's shown that with a game.
I had over 500 students come into computer labs at the university to play this game against each other. And I designed the game in a way that if they were switched on and realised that if they favoured their friend and that friend favoured them later on, that they could make more money,
This would not only take the money off the other players in the game, but it would decrease the total size of the economic pie amongst the whole group. So not only did it redistribute wealth towards them, it shrunk the economic pie. And we see both of those costs in this type of political favouritism in reality. What we ended up with were 84% of the groups we got through showed the exact type of favouritism amongst their mates that we see in politics, and they typically stole $20 of real money. I paid all the students over $10,000 altogether to participate. They stole real money off these people they'd never met who'd just walked into a computer lab together, and they felt good about it because I surveyed them afterwards, and they felt good because it was pro-social. It wasn't selfish. It was cooperative. They found a friend, they favoured their mate, that mate favoured them later on. They just didn't even think about the cost of doing so to everybody else.
This is fundamental. It's human nature you're talking about here.
You can only imagine that if you put an otherwise honest person into the political and social structure we have, that it wouldn't take very long for them to start thinking that, oh, actually, the way things are done are quite good because look at all these people. They're giving me awards. They're inviting me to dinner. They're doing all this great stuff. I must be doing something good. I'm not going to look at the costs that doing that imposes on everybody else. Oh, the property industry is looking after me. It must therefore be good for society to look after them. So you can see how easily you might get seduced in that situation. And we've proven it in the lab that 84% of people will succumb to it very quickly.
It's human nature to look after ourselves, our families, our friends, people we know. In other words, human nature is problematic. To curb the worst of it, we have laws, institutions, and codes of conduct, and they're different in different parts of the world.
It's definitely true that if you compare the way this game is played between Australia and continental Europe, particularly Northern Europe, there is a gulf of difference. What you can get away with as a politician in Australia, or what is out in the open, we'd have treason trials in the north of Europe if you do that, right? So there is also a different political mentality as to how much you can openly help yourself and your mates get rich at the expense of the rest. And of course, everywhere there are levels of corruption. Everywhere people are trying to look out for themselves more than for the community on average. But the level of acceptance and the openness of it is unusual in Australia relative to those European places.
And this isn't only coming from the Dutch outsider. Cameron Murray agrees.
We have very weak laws, particularly in Queensland, where I'm from. You can walk out of politics on Friday and work as an in-house lobbyist on Monday in the exact industry you used to regulate. That happens at the federal level as well. All we need to do is extend the definition of what's a lobbyist and the cooling off periods and have one of our oversight bodies keep an eye on that. It's not difficult. It's been done elsewhere. And that's the sort of thing we should be pushing for. I actually get a little bit frustrated when I see the well-organised parts of the community and, you know, political parties like the Greens, for example, pushing things like donations reform and, you know, real-time disclosure of donations. Well, I can tell you that's a bit of a joke because I've looked at all the donations records, and if you think having, 123 Smith Street Proprietary Limited written down on a donations register is any help to anyone, or, Jones Family Trust is any help, it's not.
In Australia, once you've stopped being a politician, a political staffer, or a public servant, you can parlay your knowledge into a very lucrative next career. In Canada, you can't do that for 5 years.
Yes, that's a very obvious rule, and Canada's not the only place who's gone for that sort of thing to stop the revolving door. I think that enacting such a rule in Australia would be a great thing. I think that Anna Bligh in Queensland, just before she left, tried to have a rule of 2 years installed. I don't think that survived very long. Queensland really is one of the most corrupt places I've ever encountered. And I've been to a lot of Southeast Asian places where things are quite bad. But yeah, no, such a rule is fairly easy, in technically speaking, to implement. I don't think it would make all that much difference in the Australian case because there are so many other ways in which the deals can be done in Australia that just a lobbying rule won't be enough. You really have to take the great gifts off the table altogether and price them in order to get rid of the entrenched rent-seeking and game of mates that's happening.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds.
I actually think what Australia needs is almost a people's movement that wants to do politics in a different way and that holds its former politicians to account. And so I think a switch in mentality is needed, but also, you know, thousands of young, smart individuals waking up, smelling the roses and realizing, okay, this is our country that we really want to live in, what is a form of banana republic in many places. And I think that once that happens, then all the solutions will sort of be dead obvious. That's really not the difficult part. The difficult part is the political movement that is necessary in order to push back all the boundaries. Because the mentality at the moment is very much, oh, call in a cop, do this particular reform, you know, get an inquiry. But that is small fry, really. It's a whole class of politics which has got to be pushed out or reformed or effectively have its mentality changed. And that needs a push. And it will need a push by young Australians who have skin in this game.
It's a bit hard to imagine young Australians, even ones with skin in the game, being able to change the system. After all, the vested interests have a lot of money at stake.
I tell all the community groups I speak to, raise money, hire professionals, hire lawyers, hire planners, and do it professionally because you're up against a well-organised professional organisation. You're not going to get there writing letters to your local member. You need professionals. You need to play their game in many ways and organise against them and start a movement. That's what you do. You don't sort of win your little battle because of a dodgy planning approval in your street. Get organised with everybody else around the country, push for change, put people into politics, talk about things, hire planners to challenge new legislation, hire lawyers to do the similar things. That's what's happening on the other side. So perhaps, you know, if there's enough community anxiety, we'll get some of that organisation for the people as well.
But Cameron, isn't the thing about Australians, we might think it's a rip-off, but we're a bit too relaxed. We're more interested in the football or the beach than in getting agitated.
We don't need everybody on board. We just need a well-organised small group pressuring where there's political leverage in marginal seats and here and there at the fringes of political parties, etc. So we can get the change, and it's not going to happen all at once. Like the mining tax, there was a sort of one industry, a large and effective change proposed there. Well, maybe superannuation will be next, or maybe banking, or maybe the public-private partnerships in transport investment will have a radical change. It won't happen all at once, but I think when there's enough pressure, particular, you know, sectors, we'll see some change. It'll just be politically expedient to respond to that pressure in that sector at that time.
Dr. Cameron Murray is an economist at the University of Queensland. Professor Paul Freitas is in the Centre for Economic Performance at the London School of Economics. They're the co-authors of Game of Mates, How Favours Bleed the Nation. You can find the details on our homepage at abc.net.au/rn. The Money is produced by Kate Piercy. Our sound engineer is Jennifer Parsonage. I'm Richard Addy.